Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Jim?
Hi, Catherine.
Hey.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. When we last talked, it was like, yay, winter solstice, which you were really excited about. And the vaccines are coming. We're just like, the worst is over. And then in the interim couple of weeks, it feels like the vaccine rollout has gone not well. This is just for me sort of scanning news reports. What's going on with the vaccine?
We were hearing these targets pretty widely that we would get tens of millions of people vaccinated by the end of the year. I think there was a target at the end of the year was 40 million back in October, and then that came down to 20 million. Well, ultimately, we got to 3 million people.
3 million. And that's just one shot, right?
Yeah, which
3 million people are half vaccinated? Which, I mean, yes, that's a lot, but, like, how did we get that far
off? Yeah, it's less than 1% of the population. It's amazing, and yet it's also, that could seem like the trajectory is significantly altered if we're, you know.
Yeah, if we're going at that pace, I think I saw some, you know, tweet or something that was like, at this pace, it'll take 100 years to vaccinate, you know, something.
I mean, that's
terrible.
That's probably not accurate, but, like, it would take a long time.
Whatever the tweet said.
It would alter this idea of, I know Biden's administration has nodded to getting 100 million people in the first 100 days vaccinated. That doesn't seem possible at all at this sort of rate.
Right.
So it's seeming a little worse than I had hoped, but...
Worse than I had hoped. That's the tagline for for this whole time.
I don't fully understand exactly what the issues are and how remediable they are and how if we can really catch up to that.
Right. Like, is this just like some glitches right now in getting things set up, or is this somehow an ominous premonition of ongoing terribleness?
Yeah, because that would obviously radically change the course of like this whole coming year, basically.
Right.
If we're that far behind. I would like to talk to someone who knows more about it, obviously, mm-hmm. than us.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to talk to Juliette Kayyem. She is the faculty chair of the Homeland Security Program at Harvard's Kennedy School. Before that, she worked as an assistant secretary for Homeland Security under President Obama. She worked with responses to disasters, including H1N1 pandemic.
And has she been working on the vaccine rollout?
Yeah, I think it's right up her alley. She's been helping to advise and monitor the progress,
mm-hmm.
but has not been working within the federal government.
Okay, so she's like a consultant for various entities.
And an academic.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But before that, I would like to call a listener who wrote in with a personal question that bears on this.
Okay. Who's the listener?
His name is Craig.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Craig, and he is a data scientist in Lexington, Kentucky.
Okie doke.
Hey, Craig. This is Jim.
Hi, Jim. Hello.
Hey, Craig.
Hi, Catherine. I'm a huge fan of the show. I think I've listened to every episode, so.
thank you. Thank you for writing to us, too.
Yeah.
It's a question I've been struggling with, and I'm not really sure how to answer it, and I don't know, hopefully you can help, and I assume it's something a lot of people are dealing with.
Yeah, I think so. So, yeah, what's going on?
So, my father has recently been diagnosed with late-stage cancer. His prognosis is somewhat uncertain, but not particularly promising. So, I feel like I need to travel to see him. I live several hundred miles away, and I'd like to spend some time with him before his health deteriorates too far, bring his grandchildren to see him, to spend some time with him.
Yeah.
You know, because time is literally running out, right? But of course, with the pandemic and, you know, traveling is a huge concern.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think my specific question for you is, whether or not is realistic to think that with vaccines starting to roll out, are travel conditions likely to improve in the next few months? So for me to be able to weigh the risks of traveling now versus waiting a few months, you know, are conditions likely to improve? What's realistic to expect?
Yeah. I'm real sorry to hear that, Craig. That's you.
Oh, thank you.
I'm sure that's really difficult to be going through right now. And so I don't think that travel for the average person is going to be different. If you're in a group that's going to get vaccinated, it might be slightly lower risk for you to travel, but we still have not vaccinated many people, and we're not going to be at some sort of critical mass that's going to change the general risk of going out in public. You know, if you take a transportation to the airport, or people you might encounter in the airport or on the flight are going to be unlikely to be vaccinated, and we're still seeing cases rise across the country. They're still really high levels, and I don't see that significantly declining between now and April. So I don't think it will be a different situation then.
Craig, can I ask you a little bit more about yourself?
Sure.
I'm just curious who you are.
Well, I'm Craig. I live in Lexington, Kentucky. I work as a data scientist. I started working from home about 9 months before everyone else did. I took a job last July where I started working from home. Mm-hmm. So I kind of lucked out in that respect.
So you had your, back support or whatever all set up by the time that that March rolled around?
Yes, my standing desk in the office that I built for myself out in the garage. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had that all set up just in time.
And then you got a dog before the pandemic, so you were like way ahead of the curve.
Yeah, we got a dog a couple months. It was November, I think, and I got a cat. I remember I got a new kitten in March, and I remember it being like possibly the last time that I went somewhere in public without a mask. Mm-hmm. I think because we were it's just the timing. Like we had already planned to get the kitten, and
right.
Yeah, we picked her up, and so
right.
Yeah,
and how many kits do you have? Can I, you feel free to share or not share level of detail you want, but I'm curious.
I have two kids, age 10 and 8, both girls who are pretty awesome. We also homeschool our children and have for years. And so another way.
Oh my God, you were totally set up.
Yes, exactly. I say that my life probably changed less than almost anyone else's because of the pandemic. I already worked from home. My kids were already homeschooled. We just got our pets.
Yeah. Right, man. Right.
Foresight.
So you're in Kentucky. Where is your father?
Delaware.
Delaware. That's a big distance. Have you seen your father since this all started? When's the last time you saw him?
We did take a trip in summer of 2020. That was like the one time I left the house during the pandemic. We spent a week at my parents' house. So I did see him in the summer, yes. But that, of course, was before his current diagnosis.
Right.
Which sort of changes a lot of the calculus.
How'd y'all go during the summer? What was your...
We drove. Mm-hmm. It's about 8 to 10 hours in the car.
Yeah.
But we do a lot of driving in my family. We do a lot of driving, especially to national parks. is our most common vacation. So 10 hours in the car, even with my kids, is not a huge deal.
Oh my God,
Catherine loves parks.
I love driving to national parks also. What's your favorite national park?
Either Yellowstone or Everglades.
One of the two. Everglades, good one. Good one. I mean, Yellowstone, obviously good, but everybody thinks about Yellowstone.
Exactly.
The alligators, terrifying.
My daughter was walking down a paved trail and yet still found herself about 5 feet away from an adult alligator who was just lounging on the side of the trail, and no one noticed it until she was right next to it and screamed.
Yeah, it's really a whole thing.
And it didn't move. It didn't care.
Yeah, well, yeah. Okay, so what you're trying to figure out is not a flying versus driving question. It's just a visiting at all question.
What I'd like to do is drive out there. And the driving, I don't feel all concerned about. It's more that, you know, once we go, we will, you know, I'd like to basically spend a week just in the house, in my parents' house, which would then, you know, basically me living with them unmasked, basically joining bubbles, I guess you could say.
Got it.
And so, you know, we are, my family has been, you know, extremely careful. I do almost never leave the house. I work from home, you know, and my parents had been extremely careful, but now they're at doctor's offices multiple times a week. Right. And my mother has to go with him too. Right. So, you know, I feel like I really am being about as careful as a person can be. So I don't think it's a huge risk for me to bring it to them. The most likely thing probably would be then, you know, us to pick it up from my mother and father, who are constantly, I mean, at doctor's offices. That seems like a great place to pick it up since you're around sick people. My mother-in-law had COVID. She was one of the very first cases, and she picked it up at a doctor's office, right?
Yeah. I should hope that at this point in the pandemic, though, that a medical facility would be equipped and the staff trained to be able to see people safely. I mean, if anyone's going to have the highest quality masks and understand and think about transmission of disease, it should be there. I'm not saying that I know that to be the case with every office.
Sure.
But there should be places that if your parents are not feeling comfortable or feeling like they're being put at risk in any of those places, that, you know, I would go someplace else.
Sure. I would also imagine that I'm also hoping, I guess, that healthcare professionals would be among the first to be vaccinated. So the people that they are interacting with would be more likely to be.
Yes.
In a month or two's time, you know, or even March, April timeframe, they would be more likely to be vaccinated, be around a lot of vaccinated people when they're at doctor's offices.
Right. It's necessary to get medical care. These are systems that are designed to help treat people and have been dealing with this pandemic for a while, and it should be able to be done safely. So I would think you'd be at higher risk in a place where there are blind spots, like if you were going to, I don't know, get a massage or get your hair cut or something, and it, you know, they're not used to dealing with sick people, and not, they're assuming people are not infectious, and people might just kind of let their guard down. And in the doctor's office, it really should be like, we're going to assume everyone here is infectious and follow those protocols accordingly.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
So I can't put your mind totally at ease, but everything that, you know, you're talking about, these are all relative trade-offs, right? And it sounds,
yes. This
is not, I mean, I absolutely do not recommend elective travel right now, but there are always exceptions to that.
So what's the answer, Jim?
The answer is that if your family is doing your absolute best, I mean, really genuinely isolating, traveling as safely as possible, and your parents are doing the same, it's not going to be a zero risk proposition. But, you know, it sounds like this is a serious condition. You don't know how much time your father has left. That if everyone is in agreement, that it would be better to take that risk than to not see each other. Also, because you're able, you know, you homeschool your kids, you're able to work from home, your parents are able to stay home and not expose other people. It becomes a more complex thing if someone in your, as you merge these pods, someone else was going to be, you'd be spreading into the public. The worst case scenario here, it sounds like you would have transmission within your family, and that's low risk, but even then it would stop there. And that makes it more of a decision that you can make as a family.
Yeah, I understand that you can't make this decision for me. I guess for me, it's just, it is about balancing risks. I understand that. And so I guess what I'm just trying to really understand is, you know, kind of what the risks are. And if there is any benefit for waiting, you know, short amounts of time, right? A month or two or three, or, you know, if conditions might be significantly different, then that could have an impact on. So I think, you know, I think I'll certainly will be going soon, but I have flexibility on when.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm trying to understand that. And so I think, you know, I think what you're telling me is that in terms of the first half of this year, there's probably not a huge difference in terms of when.
Probably.
In which case, we should probably just be as careful as we can be and
yeah,
do our best.
This is where it's impossible because as a infectious disease prevention, you know, from that perspective, all I can say is no, don't go because there is a chance of spreading disease. From the perspective of, you know, a human and someone who understands the importance of emotional and psychological well-being of this sort of scenario, the answer is, of course, you go. And so you're somewhere balancing those two, those two things.
Yep.
I think just, you know, be as safe as possible. But I think you'd be totally justified in making the decision to go.
Okay. Well, that's extremely helpful.
Craig, I don't know if this interests you, but we're actually, your question has inspired us in part to talk to an expert today. So we're actually calling an expert to get some more detail about, you know, what the next 6 months are going to look like and why the vaccine rollout is kind of going the way it is. You're welcome to join us. We're about to hop on the call with her. Would you like to join? You'd be welcome to listen in and ask a question if you want. Also, no obligation at all.
No, sure. I could do that.
Okay. Well, yeah, we're hoping to get a little more detail because right now it just feels so hard to figure out when are things going to get better. So hopefully this conversation will provide us a little bit of clarity about that. But I think Jim's recommendation stands. Hey, Juliet.
Hi, how are you? Hi.
Hi, this is Catherine.
And this is Jim.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for joining us.
Jim, of course. No, I'm thrilled.
And we have also with us Craig, who is a listener from Lexington, Kentucky.
Oh, great.
He's a data analyst.
Data scientist. Close Sorry. Enough. Hi, Craig.
Hi, Craig.
Nice to talk to you.
Craig is a data scientist with a dog and a cat, two daughters.
Oh, great. Hi, Craig.
Hello.
So you had to coordinate planning between federal, state, local governments for issues of disasters, including those involving health, like the H1N1 pandemic. So planning vaccine rollout like this is right up your alley.
Yeah.
And we're hoping you can kind of explain to us how this is supposed to work, what's happening right now, what's not working,
and
what needs to change.
And it's a hard conversation to have because the more you explain why a lot of this does look familiar in terms of the delays and the course corrections and the, you know, ramping up over time, it seems like you don't, one, someone like me is not aware of, you know, the fact that time is of the essence. We are acutely aware of it. I should disclose that since June, I've been helping state and local entities as well as non-manufacturers in the private sector, so those in logistics and movement in this. So the idea that there's been no planning, you know, these sweeping generalizations just, you know, it's just not true. That and so people need to separate what Trump and the White House has failed to do and what we're seeing on the local and state level. So just very quickly, we're seeing a little bit of what we anticipated, which is this is really hard. It's really big. Numbers are not clear. Supply and demand are off depending on where you look. So some places are plowing through their stuff. Others seem to have stuff waiting. Data systems are falling apart. Phone lines aren't being answered. Once again, I'm not forgiving, but all of this seems in the fixable realm.
Yeah.
And the solutions, like people say, the federal government needs to take control, the military needs to, none of that would work. And it shows a real lack of understanding of crisis management. That you want a public health emergency to be intimate, to be local, to be able to pivot based on what, you know, what we're seeing on the ground. And the feds are absolutely necessary. And the Trump administration did fall behind in terms of providing support and money and best practices and even resources. That will change on the 20th. And so, you know, I'm reluctant to mess with the science and the protocols, one dose, two dose, half a dose, until we can really see what the problem is. And so that's sort of where it is. And I'm not forgiving it. I'm just trying to describe it.
Right.
Could I ask a sort of basic question from a layperson's perspective? And my dog is having a nightmare in the background. That's what's
fine.
Happening. How would you describe how the rollout is going? Like, is this going well?
Oh, no. I mean, I think it depends on, you know, no. But is it inexcusable? That's where I won't go yet. Like, in other words, there's lots and lots of challenges. And I'm seeing, as I'm sure people monitoring different places are seeing different things at different places. So one is that it was the holidays. I know it drives people crazy when we say that. But, you know, the authorizations for use sort of happened right before holidays. That's always, you know, a difficult time to ramp things up in terms of initiation. So we want to wait for, you know, 7 to 10 days in January to see if the numbers are ratcheting up. So that was always going to be a challenge. The other is the allocations were off. And so states were told certain things and only got sort of half allocation. So they're just going to have to reconfigure who comes in first based on these allocation waves. In some places, they thought for, if they're in allocation one, say, they thought first come, first serve would be good, not because they want old people to sit outside for 8 hours. It's because they were really worried about vaccine hesitation. So they thought, okay, let's just do first come, first serve, get it into people's arms, and then get those who are more reluctant in later. That ended up not being a good idea. And some of it is just data management issues and data, you know, buildup issues. Things crash. Information is not shared. And then finally, a personnel issue. We got to go 24/7. We have to get nimbleness. And that's where the new money will likely go. There's about $9 billion that was just authorized. There'll probably be more under the Biden administration. That should go to bodies. Just get people able to process bodies to help the processing of vaccine distribution. So
living people.
And then I think the final thing is when I look into the end of January and early February, I think we can't quite grasp how game changing, if it works, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine will be, because that's an old school vaccine, single dose, no cold storage necessity. And you'll start to see this look a little bit like, you know, the flu vaccine, where we can walk into CVS and Walgreens. All of it takes time. All of it will have its blips and course corrections, but it is going to look better because I've seen it start like this before and then things get worked out.
But hopefully not like the flu vaccine in that only 50% of people choose to
right.
get it.
Right. That's the thing I worry the most about is the vaccine hesitation. The data since Trump lost in November, it was clear some of that data was capturing an anti-Trump sentiment. So I'm sure you and I and a bunch of us have friends that were probably you know, more skeptical than they would have been. So that data has changed and it's showing about 40% are really, really excited. And then the next 40% are excited, but they don't want to be first. And that I think we should take to heart, because those are communities, in particular minority communities, that you can work with in terms of, you know, having influencers or you know, making sure that they're seeing that the vaccine is working.
Ooh, you mentioned influencers. That's one of my interesting questions. So we're not doing influencers right now, but we might in the future.
Yeah, exactly.
Jim kind of wishes he were an influencer.
You could be.
Nicest thing anyone has ever said to me.
I don't know if you know this, but someone made fun of him on TikTok, which I thought was like a level when I was on air with him this weekend. And I thought that was like a level of coolness because I've never been on TikTok before. So the fact
that can you explain to me what happened? Because I'm behind and I'd making fun of Jim is one of my favorite hobbies.
So we were on a Brian Seltzer show, Reliable Sources on CNN, and we were talking about the rollout, and I'm talking, so I should be mad at you, and I'm talking, and Jim's eyes sort of go like, are sort of like wandering, like either WTF is she saying, or I'm bored, you know, out of my mind.
Jim has sort of a resting like face of despair.
Yeah.
So that's what he said. So someone put it on TikTok with the caption, this looks like a guy who thinks he showed up at the wrong Zoom meeting. And so I think, Jim, you defended yourself in saying that was your resting thinking face.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, first of all, I couldn't see that I was on screen because you were talking to Brian and I didn't know I should be on screen while you two are talking. And then also,
Jim, it's like you've never been on TV before. Like, this is how it works.
People who are really good at TV hits like that, like come in knowing what they're going to say. And I just respond to whatever the question is. and I don't know what the question is going to be. So I'm kind of listening to where the conversation is going and thinking really actively. And I don't know how to also do that while staring into the camera and pretend like my eyes start to wander. I get in my head. Anyway, your points were very, you know, you wouldn't be here if we didn't think that you
exactly
absolutely
thank
knew
you.
What you were talking about. So right, I'm sorry if
right.
I was saying that offense.
I want to thank you for me being on TikTok, though, because I do believe that was my first time. So,
Craig, are you on TikTok?
No, I am not on TikTok, and my children are not old enough to be on TikTok, so I don't know anything about it.
Do you think Jim could like should aspire to be an influencer or no?
Well, my wife is extremely jealous. She told me she has a crush on you, Jim.
Actually. Oh my god!
So I think so. Yeah, but that's a data point in favor of influencers.
Oh my god, his head's gonna get so
god.
Big.
This is oh my god, I can imagine it now. It's the men of COVID calendar. Sanjay Gupta, Jim. Yeah, who else can we put
I
on there?
I feel physically my friend sick to my stomach.
Tony Fauci.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on. I apologize for even bringing this up. So Craig had called us with a question, and he would like to visit a family member. And one of the things he's trying to figure out is just like, when are things going to get better? And, you know, I'm sure there are many, many caveats, but can you give us a picture of like, what is going to happen in the next 6 months? Are things going to get better? I think the kind of confusion of the early rollout has made us feel like, oh, well, wait, we thought we were going to be out of this soon, and it feels like maybe not. So
yeah,
lay out the next 6 months for us.
So I'm going to begin with me, because this is the girlfriend metric, because all my girlfriends ask me about this. I do have plans to travel abroad in August. So I'm feeling like the world will start to move well before then, unless something happens. And, you know, to your point, Craig, it's very dependent on two criteria. One is that we get more money to the states and localities under the Biden plan, which I think we'll do. And the other is that more vaccines are authorized. I mentioned Johnson & Johnson. I do not work for them. Trust me. I like what I see.
Okay. Normal-ish this summer. Do we have any understanding of like what happens between now and normal-ish? Or is it really hard to say? Are there just too many variables to say like, will things be better in X state or for X type of person by March or April?
Yes. So I think for the high risk pools and the high potential infection pools, so that's your first responders. And I'm a big proponent of the critical infrastructure and teachers going first in line as well. I think life will be very different. And look, we're already at Britain is a little bit ahead of us, but they're already at their second shot. Those first people that you saw getting vaccinated, remember that great day in December, they're now in early December, they're now at their second shot. So this can happen relatively quickly, so long as we keep up manufacturing and supply. So I think you'll start to hear states, remember, this is all run locally and statewide. The feds have a role, but each state is going to be different depending on.
So this is why like someone over 65 might be able to get it in X state, but
yes.
Yeah, in Florida, there were people who were like, if you wait overnight outside the pharmacy, you can get it. And in other states, it was like first responders who don't have it yet.
Right. And I think a new administration will tighten that up. I mean, look, we've gotten nothing from this president on this, on the rollout.
And he's been busy.
He's been very busy.
But in terms of the vaccine rollout, since it's being driven by the states, how much does the federal government matter? Like, how much is a new administration really going to be able to change anything?
Oh, a lot, and relatively quickly. So in crisis management, we say the locals execute, the states coordinate, and then the federal government supports. But that support is a check.
Like cash.
Yeah, cash. Okay. We just need to, it's a lot of resources are needed so that we can pay a bunch of people or volunteer. But even, you know, setting up volunteer corps takes money because you have to train them. I mean, you know, in other words, I know lots of people want to help, but all of the infrastructure costs money. And so that's what you're going to see. And that can move, I want to tell you, that can move relatively quickly. And the reason why, and why I'm against the feds overtaking it or the military, whatever silly things you hear, is because there's already an infrastructure that we can plug into, that you could put more resources into, that begins at the local level, you know, for the private sector with CVSs and Walgreens and stuff. So it's not ideal. We wish that this had all been done 3 months ago, but I mean, what do we expect from this president? So I have not changed my time frame, despite what we're seeing. You know, everyone like me who looks at this stuff and works it, you know, is going to look at the data this coming Monday, the 11th, and then the 18th. And if you're not seeing significant changes in numbers, then maybe the structure is off. But there's nothing I'm or hearing from people who are also looking, like Fauci and people at the CDC, that suggests we can't get those numbers up.
Craig, is this helpful? Does this answer your question?
So I think it definitely sounds like the answer is summer is really when we can expect things to get better. For my personal situation, as I said, I think that may be too long. Mm-hmm. And so it's telling me maybe that I can't wait, and that there's not much of a difference between January or February or March.
Yeah. Don't think of it as a light switch, though. So when I say summer as normalish, I mean, you know, you're going to feel like it's 2019 in many ways. I mean, in other words, you will go to restaurants. If you have the vaccine, we're going to have identification systems that, you know, either apps or cards that show that you're protected. We're going to have faster tests. So I think between March and June, right? Because this is a rolling recovery. As more people get vaccinated, the safer it is, because you're starting to get towards herd immunity. So don't think of it as a light switch this summer. I think you'll feel life is different in the post-winter phase.
But even if I'm weighing risks, so I don't feel like I can wait until even May, going visiting him in March, for even versus now, what you're telling me is there will be a progression, right? And that the risks will be getting lower, even waiting now to, you know, end of February, mid-March, those sort of time frames. The more time I can wait, probably the better the pandemic will be.
Yes.
Well, they should be getting better, but the vaccines are going to be wider spread. But like you were saying, Juliet, if people start to get complacent, if we don't wear masks and distance, we could still see rates rising. Mm-hmm. And that would actually mean it, if your family is outside of that pool of available vaccinations, you don't want to travel in February as opposed to now if rates are actually higher in February. So there's variables here.
I'm fully aware that none of this is certain.
Yeah.
It's all, at this point, I need to make plans and weigh risks.
Yeah.
And so I'm just trying to find the best way to weigh the risks. And it does sound like that the most probable outcome is that as vaccines start to get rolled out really and, you know, heavily in February, really, right? Mm-hmm. Then that's good for the case counts going down, meaning that my risk of infection continues to get lower.
It should.
If not a lot. It doesn't go for, you know, maybe it doesn't even drop 50%, but it goes down some amount.
Yeah. And that's how to think of it, is a rolling, is that, you know, each day you're going to be adding to that risk reduction, not only because of what you're doing, but because of what's happening out in the community. So I know you want to visit your dad specifically. And I think that will look very different in March and April for you.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thanks.
I'm now totally fixated on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
Good.
That's what this conversation has done for me.
Yeah. No, definitely. It is something, there's lots to look forward to. And so just, you know, if we can just get out of the sweeping generalizations.
Right. It's not, things are going to be terrible or things.
Yeah, no plan. Yeah, exactly. Right. It's like, we all start talking like we're Trump. We'll get those sweeping generalizations out.
Well, none of us are really good at, well, I won't speak for you.
Patience,
I'm not very good at the in-between, which is what this whole time is like a forcing mechanism for. And what Craig's trying to do is just balance these like risks. I guess data, Craig, though, you're a data scientist. Like this is your, you would be better prepared than most, I assume, to weigh these risks.
Yeah, I was trained as an astrophysicist, actually. So yeah, in my head, I'm creating mental probability curves and multiplying them in my head. Like that's how I think.
Yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about, but it sounds great.
But to me, that makes sense. I just want to understand the shape of the risk curve, right, over time, is really what I'm trying to get
right.
to do. And if I understand that, that really helps me make decisions.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. The risk curve is bending down.
Yes. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you again for spending your time talking to us, and we'll stay on it and look forward to staying on the news of new vaccines too.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Juliet. See you on TV soon.
Bye. Yeah, see, bye. And TikTok, and TikTok. Come on.
And work on your face, Jim.
Bye. Bye. See you guys later. Bye.
Was that helpful? Did it give you a little more detail?
Yeah, I think so. I think the main point, too, of not thinking of it like a light switch is a super important one.
Right. It's not. So. Yeah, totally. I feel like that was something that was a realization early in the pandemic, just in terms of like, we kept being like, when is this going to be over? And it was like, no, it's not like that. It's not just regular life is not just going to come back one day.
I think that's a lesson we have to continually relearn.
Yeah.
I don't want to. Craig, I am really sorry to hear about your dad. I know that you are not alone in facing these kinds of decisions, and please let us know if we can be helpful in any other way. And I hope you get to see your father soon.
All right. Well, thank you for spending. I mean, I got to specifically talk to a bunch of experts. Really appreciate that. And I also just will say, I think, you know, the show is fantastic. It certainly helps me deal with all the uncertainty around the pandemic. I'm sure it's helping a lot of people.
Thank you. That's really nice. It definitely helps me. So I'm glad it's helpful to other people too. Well, good luck, Craig, and keep us posted.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
This show was produced today by Kevin Townsend. Thank you, Kevin. We also have a senior producer, AC Valdez, who has recently joined us and is helping us out on this. You can write us at socialdistance@theatlantic.com, just as Craig did, and we will hopefully be able to help. And you can also call us and leave a voicemail at 202-642-6487. One quick thing. We had a listener call in to that number and say that it was her birthday today. She was asking what she could do for her birthday. There are no good answers, but I will say I just wanted to say happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday.
She didn't leave her name, but whoever you are, mystery listener, happy birthday.
And happy 100 episodes, Catherine. Can you believe that you had to talk to me 100 times?
I mean, I feel it in my bones, but a lot of phone calls.
Yeah, but we had a uplifting episode today, and next week I can talk about how that could be complicated by the mutations that you're hearing about.
Is what you're trying to tell me that we'll have to talk 100 more times? In seriousness, thanks for talking to me 100 times.
Thank you for letting me talk. I'm kidding. Thank you for talking to me.
All right. If you like this show and want to access all of The Atlantic's journalism, the best way to do that is by subscribing to The Atlantic at theatlantic.com/support us, where you can read Jim's journalism, Juliet's journalism, many, many other people's journalism that is helping us stay informed throughout this whole thing. Thank you for listening. And talk to you later, Jim. Talk next week?
Yep.
All right. Bye.
Bye.